That rain was nice to hear last night. I just got good and relaxed and thought it's going to be a good night's sleep when a heavy 85-pound Weimaraner is scared of thunder. And she thinks Missy or I can save her. So she climbs up between our heads. So that's how we spent last night, relaxing in the rain with again, a heavy 80-pound dog scared to death. Gun dog, she should be loud noises. She should live for those things. She doesn't. But I digress. In the classic novel, Alice in Wonderland, Alice comes to a fork in the road. And one path leads to the left and one leads to the right. And so she asks the Cheshire Cat for advice. And she says, "Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here?" "And that depends a good deal on where you want to get," said the cat. "I don't much care where," said Alice. "Then it doesn't matter which way you choose to go," said the cat. There are a lot of people like Alice who don't seem to know where they're going. They kind of drift through life, and for all intents and purposes, it looks like they're not going anywhere and that they're not doing anything with their lives. But if you were to ask those people, I think most would say that they want to do more with their lives, that they would like to believe that they were doing more than just living or just getting by. They'd like to believe that they have a reason to live. And that, for humans, is very natural because God built that yearning into our hearts. In Ecclesiastes 3:11, it says there that He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men. God has set this belief in each of our hearts that there's more to life than just living. He's created seemingly this hole inside of us, this feeling that we are meant more than just surviving this life. But a lot of people question what their purpose in life might be. And the problem with most is that they don't know where they're going, and they're not sure if they will ever get there. David did not have that problem. He never worried about where he was or where he was going or what he was doing. And you can see that there at the beginning of the 23rd Psalms, where he says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters." David knew where he was going because he had a shepherd leading him. And that shepherd, God, knew the path that David needed to follow. And of course, we all have options in life. We don't have to take God as our shepherd. We don't have to follow Him or allow Him to lead us in our lives. We can go wherever we want to go and choose to do whatever we want to do. And that's what a lot of people do. But somebody has to decide what path we're going to take. And if it isn't God, that leaves about two other options. That leaves yourself, and that leaves somebody else. And the Bible tells me the problem with those other kinds of shepherd is that when it's someone else choosing the path, in Proverbs 14:12, that there is a way that seems right to man, but in the end leads to death. Highly educated people tend to seek out the wisdom of philosophers and great thinkers. Now, when I took some college back a while, I took a philosophy class, and I probably enjoyed it the most because I found out there was really no wrong answer. You could give the most goofiest answer ever, and they would look at you like, "Wow, this guy, he's smart," and you could say whatever. My kind of people. But what really sticks out in my memory of that is that these philosophers, some of them weren't even sure that they existed. One great thinker was named Descartes, and he struggled with the question of his own existence. And he developed what many considered an earth-shattering conclusion. He said, "Yes, I exist." And then he said, "How do I know I exist?" And he said, "I think, therefore I am." Wow, This is a genius, right? He thought because that's why he was, because he could think, hey, hold your hand up to fire. I bet he could have came up with the same answer. But that's the kind of thinking you end up following if God is not your shepherd. People with this kind of intellect can end up living in a land of death because they can't even accept the simple truth that they exist. Less scholarly people tend to get advice from their peers. I too am also one of them. You might know or not know, I do enjoy TV. And a lot of times with TV, when problems pop up for characters, the advice they get from their friends is usually, let's go down to the bar and have a drink. And again, not sound advice, because anytime you're going through something with difficulty, putting chemicals inside of your body that alters the brain chemistry, it's not the way to go. But in real life, a lot of people follow this way as well. They attempt to bury difficulties in booze and drugs or other distractions in life. They numb themselves, hoping that when they wake up again, the problems will be gone. But that really isn't how making problems go away works. They may hide for a while, but eventually that feeling of hopelessness and death returns. And then there are the other people who seek to know the truth by other means. They know where the path of their personal life lies, but they don't seek God in it. They're not satisfied, or maybe they don't like the answers they believe He may give them. And so they turn to things like astrology or horoscopes or seances and things like that. And all of those activities to me are silly. But the Bible also says that they are demonic. Scripture condemns each of those things by the stars or tea leaves or speaking to the dearly departed. At the heart of all of it is death. And eventually, someone will get around to asking that ultimate question, when will I die? And true to form, they will get some form of answer or another. Their spiritual advisor will tell them a date that they are going to die, and then they live in fear of that inevitable destiny for the rest of their lives. But that's just what I'd expect. Again, because like the writer of Proverbs says, there is a way that seems right to man, but in the end leads to death. A lot of times the Bible compares us to sheep. And just like sheep, we're going to follow someone or something. But if we don't make it a point to follow the correct shepherd, we will lose our way. Israel had that problem. The people of the law, chosen to be God's people. But even for all their legacy, they still often ended up following the wrong shepherds. To a point at one time when Isaiah cries out in Isaiah 53:6, all we like sheep have gone astray, and we have turned everyone to his own way. Recently, there was a story about some shepherds in eastern Turkey. And this is the only news out of Turkey you're going to get that's not going to involve ISIS, so soak it in. About 1,500 sheep from various flocks gathered together in one pasture. And the group of shepherds had gotten together and were having breakfast, and nobody was watching the sheep. And one sheep, as you can imagine, thought he saw a shortcut. And it turns out his shortcut was off the side of a cliff. Well, one sheep saw him do that, and so 399 others followed this sheep to their deaths. In a matter of moments, 400 sheep lay dead at the bottom of the cliff, and several more had suffered some serious injuries. And the total loss was estimated around $74,000. Because that which may seem right unto a sheep or a man leads to death. As long as we are following the wrong shepherd. And when you hear Psalms 23, oftentimes we hear that at funerals. And I think if you aren't a churchgoer, you might think this is a psalm about death. But it's not. The 23rd Psalm really is a psalm of life. We are called to follow the Good Shepherd, and that Good Shepherd intends to lead us into everlasting life. When other people seek to follow some other shepherd other than God, they end up walking down a lot of blind alleys or off of a cliff. But David knew he didn't have to worry about walking down blind alleys or off a cliff. His shepherd had created him. His shepherd knew him intimately. His shepherd knew what David could do and where David needed to be. His shepherd had created him to have the best he could have in this life. His shepherd wasn't just leading him to some pie in the sky by and by. His shepherd was leading him to steak on his plate while he waited. And you just think about what David is saying here in this psalm, and I'll read it again, where it says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." And you think about that. God leads him. God feeds him, guides him, comforts him, protects him. This psalm is all about the Good Shepherd, so that we can receive his blessings that he freely wants to give. One little girl quoted this psalm who said, "The Lord is my shepherd, that's all I want." But now, that's not to say that we're not going to encounter hardship and loss in our lives. When you read through the various psalms, you find a startling number of places where David is almost despondent and filled with despair and hopelessness. In Psalms 4:1, he says, "Answer me when I call to you, O my righteous God. Give me relief from my distress. Be merciful to me and hear my prayer." Later in Psalms 10:1, he says, "Why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble?" And then in 13, verses 1 and 2, he asks, "How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and every day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me?" In each of these psalms, David is pouring out his heart to God. He's telling God exactly how he feels in that moment in time. That doesn't mean he's lost his faith in God. It means that there are times where life is so dark and hopeless that it can seem that God isn't there, or that God doesn't care. That there are valleys that are as dark as death itself. And times when you think that no one else knows what you're going through and no one cares. David had been through enough of that. By the time he wrote the 23rd Psalm, he was able to say, "Yes, I have been through the valley of the shadow of death, and I've learned not to be afraid, because God has never left me." God was his good shepherd, and he always was close at hand to protect David with his rod and staff. And we can have the same assurance that David has in our lives. But there, of course, is a catch. There's always something we must do in order to have that kind of assurance in our lives. There's something that we have to be willing to commit to in order to have God be our shepherd. We've got to let God be the shepherd. We've got to be willing to let him take over. And that's a hard thing to do for many people. There are plenty of people who would willingly say they serve God, but they only want him to have kind of an advisory capacity. In other words, they don't want God to be the shepherd. They don't want God to take direction of their lives. And really, it's because in our human minds, we reason that God might not get it right, that he might mess things up. It's difficult to let God be God, It's hard to let him be our shepherd. Even people who really want God to do so occasionally struggle with this concept. I think I've encountered this kind of thinking when talking freely with brethren from here and there. And I would say all of these men are good, faithful, Bible-believing men. But as we talked and listened and we spoke about things, being upset at different things church has done, both in the denominational world and in the brotherhood, things that they felt that we were slipping away from or that was being added to, they were frustrated and they were getting more than a little angry at man-made thinking that they saw was intruding Christianity. But the more I listened, the more I realized that they were getting angry about things that they weren't able to personally change. And finally, someone a lot smarter than the rest of us said, sometimes you just have to let God be God. There's not a thing that you're going to be able to do to change most of these things that you're upset about. So you've got to accept the fact that there comes a time when you just got to turn things over to God and let Him worry about the things that you can't change. And then you do what you can change, what you have influence over. We need to allow God to be God. We need to let the Good Shepherd take over things that we can't control. And we can usually tell when this is going about. Whenever you get angry or upset, you have that sense of frustration with your job or family or your congregation or your neighborhood. I know when I get like that, Missy says, "Are you getting grumpy?" And I hear that a lot, and it makes me even more grumpier. But I also know that it's a warning sign that tells me that I need to move back from the driver's seat and look back towards what God is pointing to. In Psalms 23, David sees himself as a sheep in the field. He remembers what it was like to be a shepherd with his flock. His sheep never had to worry because he was always there. His sheep never had to concern themselves with the dangers of the hills because their shepherd was prepared to fight and save them. And thus, his sheep had reason to be confident and to grow and prosper because their faith was in their shepherd. Charles Spurgeon once wrote that the sheep is not safe because it says, "I am stronger than the lion," or "I am able to escape from the bear," or "I shall always be able to avoid the wolf." Silly sheep, what canst thou do to protect thyself from thy foes? We are the sheep. God is the shepherd. Sheep have their jobs, and shepherd has his job. And we obtain that assurance and self-confidence only when we know God as our shepherd. And this final story is one probably everybody has heard at one time or another. There's a story of a famous actor who was once a guest of honor at a social gathering where he received many requests to recite his favorite excerpts from different literary works. An old preacher was among the audience, and he asked the actor to recite the 23rd Psalm. And the actor agreed upon the condition that the preacher would recite it as well. And so the actor stood up and began to recite the famous psalm. And it was everything that you could imagine coming from a polished actor. His phrases were elegant. His voice rose and fell with each thought with its proper emphasis. And when he finished, the crowd broke out into a lengthy applause. And then the old preacher rose, and though his voice was rough and broken from many years of preaching, and his diction was anything but polished, when he finished, there was not a dry eye in the room. And later, someone asked the actor, "What made the difference between your reading and his?" And the actor said, "I know the psalm, but he knows the shepherd." If there is anyone here this morning that needs the guidance of the Good Shepherd, we encourage you to come as together we stand and we sing.